and you are tuned in to the Tuesday Morning Show. I'm Heidi Holton. John Latimer is away. It's time for our bird conversation. Chock full of birds right now. Pam Perry is joining us. She's a retired non-game wildlife biologist with the DNR. And Charlie Mitchell, our phenology coordinator. Welcome, both of you.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
It is a pleasure. And Charlie, it's good to see you here on Zoom.
I know. It's great to see you too. Were you one of the, John last week was talking about the Rice Lake National Wildlife Refuge excursion, I think last weekend. Were you one of the Magnificent Seven who got to see the summer tanager?
I was not.
Okay.
I was not. I didn't make it out to Rice Lake. I have seen summer tanagers before, and I've seen them right in the Brainerd area. So it
That's
happens,
awesome.
You know, and it's one of those things that bird watchers are, we love seeing all the regular birds, but wow, our rare bird. And last year at Rice Lake, we had a loggerhead shrike, which was a biggie. So
yeah, I remember that.
That was really, really good.
Seems like that yearly birding excursion has some good luck with the rare birds.
Yeah, well, it's at the right time. Mm-hmm. May is, the top month for bird watchers. Bird watchers just go crazy. They can't get in enough looking and finding things and getting outside. And, of course, the weather's wonderful and it's not buggy yet. And then, and like what we're seeing this year, the leaves are coming out so fast, and then you can't see things as well. So,
Absolutely.
So we're already there. And I will say, and I've been listening, you know, to the student comments and all the, the news about fires and all that. Boy, it's hot and dry in Brainerd.
Yep, it sure is. With the leaf out stuff, from John, I've learned about the Baltimore Orioles and how they build those hanging nests out of grass.
Yes.
And that they're easiest to spot before leaf out. Is there any particular habitat that I should be looking for those nests?
Well, we're almost past it now already, with
Darn
the leaf out. deciduous trees. I've found them all over the place. Edges. And just hanging from the trees, you go, oh, there's an oriole. Or you think there's something up in the tree and, oh, it's an oriole nest hanging down. So
okay.
But we're getting to the point now where they're even going to be hard to see.
Yeah. I always see them in the fall and they're like, of course, annoyingly close to where I walk every day. And it was there all summer and I didn't see it. So
right.
I'm really
right.
trying to spot some earlier
on. And so are the warblers and vireos and many other nests that you, yes. Oh, I didn't know this was so close. And Charlie, I heard you say earlier about warblers and hard, how they're hard to ID. And, I love warblers. This is my favorite time to see them. There's a couple things I'd recommend for people. Number one, Mick, you have the Merlin app. I recommend everyone mm-hmm. download the Merlin app onto their phone because it will tell you what's there. It IDs the sign. It's free. It's
yep.
such a great, great resource.
And it works if you don't have service, which I think a lot of people don't expect it to work if they're, out of Wi-Fi or cell phone.
Yeah.
It still works. Yep.
Yeah. Well, and I've already seen a lot of warblers and I've heard as many or more. And what the Merlin app will do is it will ID it for you, and then you can look for it and go, oh yeah, there it is. Or maybe you won't see it, but at least you knew mm-hmm. it was in the area. One of my favorites is a golden winged warbler, and I heard those yesterday. A lot of oven birds are singing. We had a red start on Saturday. They're just all coming in. Nashville's, Tennessee's. It takes time. You mm-hmm. just have to be patient with it. But we're also getting vireos. Now, these birds that are coming in, what's special about them is they're called neotropical migrants. And that means that they're New World tropics. They go down to the tropics for the winter and come back here in the spring to nest and raise their young. And Why do they come here? Because we have an abundance of insects.
We sure do.
And they
Yes.
are insect eaters. And so then we also get all the fly catchers, great crested fly catchers have arrived. The wood pewees, I think, are around. I haven't heard one yet, but they're very close.
Did you say wood? Oh, pewees, not kiwis.
No, pewees.
Okay. So
Yeah.
if we have a kiwi
Wood,
here
eastern
and I've
wood
just heard
pewees.
about it.
Yes. So those are all coming in. Orioles, of course, hummingbirds. I saw my first hummingbird yesterday. I put my feeder out this morning. So they're coming in. It's a great time. Now, another way, besides the Merlin app, another way to learn birds is get out with people who know birds. And I want to put in a plug for the bird hikes at the Arboretum, Northland Arboretum in Brainerd. During the month of May, Wednesdays and Saturdays at 8 a.m., you can join a hike with some experienced birders that will point things out and say, "Yes, there it is." There, and real that's how I learned, was getting out with people and doing that. And I really encourage, come and join us. I'm at most of the hikes here in Brainerd at the Northland Arboretum because I love getting out.
And also in Grand Rapids, they've got warbler walks for the month of May as well. I think Wednesdays and Saturdays as well. So there's other places. If you know of some bird hikes going on in northwestern Minnesota, please let us know. You can text 218-326-1234.
I know the Saxon Bog is also hosting warbler walks and others, I think Songbird Saturdays. So lots of opportunities to get out with people who know what they're talking about, and that is so valuable. I know a lot of the birds that I can actually recognize, not just identify. So recognize you see the bird and you know the bird. Identify, you see the bird and you can look it up and figure out what it is. That's kind of my distinction between the two. And the ones that I recognize are the ones that I've been out with a birder and said, "Oh, turkey vultures start with a V. They fly with their wings in a V and kind of wobble around. Eagles hold their wings straight out." And that's the kind of stuff that actually sticks really well in my head, and I can remember and actually recognize those species when I'm out in the wild. There's nothing like having an actual birder to go out birding with.
It really makes all the difference. And you learn those things, and the ones that stick in your head, you go, "Got it. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I remember that." No, that's really now like rose-breasted grosbeaks singing. And they were singing in my backyard this morning, and I'm seeing them, of course. They are known as the breathless robin because they don't take breaks. They have a song that has a tone like a robin, but the robin goes doo-loot, 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 and there's breaks in it. The grosbeak, no, it's just one solid long song. And so you can pick them up. You learn a few every year. And then you just keep adding on to them. I used to go out with birders and I would go, "How did they know that? How did they pick that up?" And well, I do it now because, and it's just the years of experience to do that.
Absolutely. I remember during one workshop, John Latimer was mentioning, you know, I'm not a great birder. I only know about 60 species. And all of the rest of us in the room were like, "Only 60?" And yeah, there you just keep adding on to that
You keep
knowledge.
adding on to it.
Yep. And
And
I'd say I'm
after,
probably around 60 now after three years of slowly accumulating.
it gets there. Catbirds and brown thrashers are back. The brown thrasher, again, being a wonderful singer, and easy to see and pick out because they're big and with a long reddish brown tail. And then the catbirds, of course, are mimics. Catbirds are one of my favorite singers because they'll throw in mechanical sounds into the song. They mimic things, and you'll have all this song. You go, "What is that?" And then all of a sudden, there's some mechanical type noises or different things. And you go, "Oh, catbird." And then they go, "Meow." Meow, which is how they got their name.
Yep. I had a great run-in with a catbird over the weekend. I was canoeing with my wife, and we were paddling around this little back channel of the St. Croix, and out pops this kind of largish gray bird and started singing the cat song, maybe 5 feet from our canoe. We think it might have been trying to distract us from a nest, maybe, but I'd never seen the little dark patch on its head so closely before.
Oh, yeah. Well, you have to get close enough. Yeah.
It was a really fun experience.
Yeah, they're a favorite. I've heard barred owls quite a bit the last few nights. And sometimes you'll hear two of them, and that's called a duet. And, of course, it's the male and female going back and forth. I do want to remind people that if they would like to get barred owls, and they're in the, you know, wooded areas, they're cavity nesters, and you can put up boxes for them. And it's kind of like a wood duck box, but you can get plans online, and they need trees big enough to nest in. And that's often the limiting factor, is that woodpeckers can nest in, well, especially downies, in small trees, but boy, the owl needs a bigger cavity, a bigger diameter tree. So sometimes you can add those boxes and get the owls, and that's nice.
With barred owls, I hear their duets, and then I also hear the like caterwauling, where instead of making a ooh ooh sound, they make the ah 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 ah.
That's good.
What on earth are they up to?
They like making noises, and they make a lot of different noises. And the young ones, when the young ones come out of the nest, I had a couple of them in my backyard one night. I thought, what is that noise? And they were making a totally different sound. But the barred owls are capable of making, they don't just hoot. Mm-mm. No, they make lots of noises. Yeah, and the caterwauling, all these different things, and you go, wow. So, but they're letting the whole forest know they're there. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Now, they don't get along with great horned owls. Is that correct?
No. Okay, nothing gets along with great horned owls.
Is there a danger with letting the whole forest know where you are if the great horned owl is about, or do they drive them off?
Let's see, how can I say this? They're going to go places where the great horned owls are not.
Okay.
You know, the other name for a great horned owl is tiger of the woods. You know, they'll take skunks. You know, the great horns are big enough to, and they will take smaller owls. They take lots and lots of stuff. So if there's, you know, usually the barred owls are more forested areas. The great horns are open areas. Okay. Fields, farmlands, more open air. You know, they divide up, but the barred owls aren't going to stay a nest. Their youngsters would be so vulnerable to a great horned owl. You know, they just wouldn't do that. So they kind of divide out.
That's interesting. Yeah. Oh, in the fall and the winter, we can hear both species where I live. Uh-huh. But as soon as the summer comes along, it's only the barred owls that we hear.
Yeah.
So I wonder if they know the great horned of.
They've gone somewhere else. Which is
cool.
Yeah, which is good. Yeah.
Yeah.
We're talking birds today with Pam Perry, also our phenology coordinator, Charlie Mitchell. Pam, I want to get to this question. Charlie had mentioned this earlier about how she's helping out birds with nests. And so with cattail fluff, I know that's not the official thing to say there, but Mary wants to know, she said, is it okay to put out pet hair for bird nests, like a dog's undercoat?
Yes. Yes, definitely.
With the caveat.
Natural things like that are wonderful. Just don't do the dryer lint. There's too much plastic and dyes and other things in there.
And if I can add a major caveat to that one, if you treat your dog with the topical flea or tick repellent, that gets into their fur. And the birds use that fur for like the very inner lining of their nests where the eggs are laying directly on that fur. And that topical tick and flea ointment will get into the eggshell and is known to kill the chicks so that they don't hatch or they die shortly after hatching. So if you do treat your dog with that kind of stuff, be sure you throw that fur into the trash. If your dog is treated with the oral tea tick and flea repellent, you're probably fine as long as it's not too soapy. But the clean, natural fur is great. Stay away from the pesticide stuff.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, mm-hmm. we always have to be careful with the pesticide stuff, all those kind of things. Doesn't just kill what it, you know, they label it for, you know, it can affect other living things as well. I wanted to say one more thing, if I could. In John's report, he mentioned the painted turtle hatchlings.
Yes.
And many of the listeners know I have a thing for herps, for reptiles and amphibians. I really like them too, besides birds. And I was down at Rotary Park the other day, couple days ago, on one of these warmer, sunny days, and the Mississippi River goes through there. And yes, the number one turtle you'll see basking is painted turtles. And they're basking so they can get their metabolism revved up so that they can lay eggs. You know, that they have to warm up from the environment. But I also saw spiny softshell turtles.
Yay, my favorite kind, a river pancake.
Yes, river pancake turtles. Exactly. Yes. And there were two of them on the log. And because I had my bins and I looked through the binoculars, you know, I was going, well, what's that? Oh, two softshells, because you don't see them very often. They don't bask as much as the painted turtles. But they're out there and they're in the rivers, and they too wanted to warm up, get their metabolism going so they can lay eggs.
Absolutely. Spiny is one of two softshell turtles we have in Minnesota. We've got the spiny and the smooth softshell. Yes. I can tell you from experience, the spiny softshells are a lot more feisty, and the smooth ones, if you, like, you know, handle those ones, they won't bite you. They just hang out.
The spiny ones are known for biting. Yeah, be really careful. I did pick one up once that had been kind of hit by a car or had some injury, and moved it off the road and down towards the river. And it was so stunned, it didn't do anything. And afterwards, I thought, you know, you got to be careful doing those things. Otherwise, I just grab things and pick things up. And I've done that since I was a kid. So tinies are known, they have a long neck, and they can reach around and give you a bite. So just be careful with them, but they are very cool turtles.
But do help them across the road. Absolutely. It is a busy time for turtles. They're crossing the road trying to lay their eggs or to find mates. And
right. And we're getting, as we get into June, which is the main turtle nesting egg laying season. Yes, do help them across the road.
A safe way to pick them up is by the bottom part of their shell called the plastron and near the rear.
Okay.
Definitely towards the rear. Mm-hmm. Yes. Not by the tail.
Mm-mm. There we go. It's Pam Perry for our monthly bird and herp talk, and Charlie Mitchell. You guys, thank you so much for being with us today. We appreciate it.
This is a joy. Thank you. Good to see you.
It is. It's great. Thanks for having me. And I just encourage everyone, get outside and see what's happening.
That's right. And Pam Perry will be one of those people that you can learn from at the Northland Arboretum. There are bird walks Wednesdays and Saturdays.
Yes, at 8.
At 8. Thanks so much.